It's the Lonely TARDIS Season 2, Episode 3, Your Guide to Time Lords and Space. I'm Dolly Domofsky. Joining me is Steven Strom.
Yeah, no, I didn't. I had you came in so fast and so hard,
wow,
like you're wont to do.
Like
that I didn't know what I didn't. I didn't have an intro prepared this time, so I'll work on it next week. I'll pre-write some out on note cards.
That sounds good. Yeah, I think that's a good idea. We have an awesome episode today because Sean is not joining us.
Mm-hmm. It's my turn to rule the roost now, Norton, wherever you may be.
Sean was in the first episode, and you weren't, and now you're in this episode, and Sean weren't.
And Sean weren't, and now there's balance in the universe.
There is now balance. The yin and the yang have come together and formed a phoenix that has grown out of the ashes of the previous doctor.
All there is left to do now is that Sean and I have to become one entity right now, like Tuvix.
I've seen photos, mm-hmm, and I don't really want to explain them.
Yep. You have read The Gods Themselves, haven't you? It's basically like that.
Yeah. Something
sure
close.
Some
Paradise Lost, I think, is what I read. I think that's The Passion of the Cripes. That was horrible. That was horrible.
Passion of the Creeps.
Excellent episode today because we are going to be talking about episode 3 of series 7 of Doctor Who.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be a shorter episode than probably normal.
Yeah, we are we're recording right here. It's a Tuesday evening. We're going to try to knock this bad boy out by midnight Dally time, which is real people time.
That's only because you are forced to use the sun as a measurement of time in Detroit because there is no technology there.
There's no technology here. We are living in the wild, wild west.
The only technology is RoboCop, I should point out.
Which is amazing because this week's episode of Doctor Who, A Town Called Mercy, starred a RoboCop and was taking place in the Wild Wild West.
A what?
Maybe
you didn't hear me the first time.
So I watched this episode 2.5 times.
Two and a half,
yeah.
You got halfway through the third viewing and just said, oh, that's enough.
Yeah, I said, forget this shiznit. Time to record an episode. No. Yeah, I watched it a couple times. I watched it the night that it debuted, but I was so tired that I didn't catch half of it. So then I watched it on Sunday. And I'd be yawning right now. Sorry for that pause. I watched it again on Sunday, and then I watched the entire thing again today. Yeah. So
you're yawning because, fun fact, you haven't slept since then.
Basically, I have not slept since then. No, I've been drinking heavily and crying. No,
That's what fuels me.
Doctor Who fuels me. So let me get into the plot real quick. As we are wont to do, we spoil the plot right away. It's the very
Let's
first
keep it
thing
shorter than last week's
45-minute plot.
Yeah.
Well, essentially, the Doctor and Amy and Rory, they had... Now, did this take place right after the Dinosaurs on a Spaceship?
I would imagine not, because at the end of Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, they said that they wanted some time off, that they wanted, after they hung out with the Doctor, that they wanted some months off or something like that. And at the end of Dinosaurs on a Spaceship, you do see them back at their house. So presumably the Doctor went off and did some doctor-y stuff for a little while.
Well, they were on their way to the Day of the Dead celebration in Mexico, which Amy mentions right at the beginning of the episode. They're taking the TARDIS there. But instead, they arrive in the wild, wild west in a little town called Mercy that has electricity about 20 years before electricity is invented. So they learn from the...
Before electricity is invented?
Well,
that's how it works.
Before electricity is
utilized
in the way that we can understand. So they're told...
What are those clouds in the sky, Bernard? I don't know, dear.
I don't know.
It looks like electricity. I think we've just invented it. I'm sorry.
Lightning. No, they're told that the town is being... it's being kind of overrun, or not overrun, but it's being...
cut off from the rest of the world.
Cut off from the rest of the world by a cyborg named the Gunslinger. Who's using some type of alien weapons and stuff, and they come to find out that there's a another doctor in the town who's also an alien. His name is Collar Jex, who's been kind of watching over the town. He introduced electricity to them, protecting the town. He's been their physician. He helped them solve a cholera outbreak. He was the one that kind of came up with the electricity. So town is thriving, but they're cut off from the rest of the world by the cyborg murderer.
Running out of food and supplies as well, because the cyborg also won't let them get any new supplies from out of town.
Correct. So he will let them leave. They develop. It's almost like a ring around the collar.
Yeah, like a perimeter.
And so the more they speak to the doctor, Collar Jex, they come to find out that he's actually helped develop the cyborgs on their planet as war machines, and he's almost like a war hero or a war criminal, depending on who you ask.
He's sort of a Dr. Mengele if the Nazis had been successful. Not necessarily any extermination or anything like that. But he stopped a war through like horrifying experiments on unwitting test subjects.
Essentially, he created what amounts to is the atom bomb for their planet. Right? He helped end the war, but it caused horrific things to happen. So the doctor gets miffed, puts him in jail, in the town's jail. Doctor actually ends up becoming the marshal after the current marshal gets killed by the cyborg.
Marshal John Crichton of Farscape.
Yeah, exactly. The doctor, once he finds out about Collar Jex's war crimes, sort of snaps and grabs him, takes him outside, and almost throws him across the perimeter line to just get killed by the cyborg. Super interesting scene takes place in which Amy eventually calms the doctor down and tells him that he's changed and he's not the doctor that they're used to. They can't turn into the evil mass murderer type of person that or the evil evil scientist, evil doctor that Collar Jex is. They have to think on a different level. And so Doctor calms down.
Before you go we should maybe point out that the gunslinger was one of the test subjects of Collar
Jex.
Malfunctioned and regained his self-control or whatever like that. And he is killing off all of the people involved with the project, including Collar Jex, or trying to kill Collar Jex for revenge.
Yep, and he says, all right, well, if you guys are going to try to protect this guy, then either give him up tomorrow at noon, or I kill everybody in the town. So
showdown
at high noon. So the doctor kind of ponders what to do the entire night. The town rebels at one point. He tosses the idea back and forth of just letting Collar Jex walk across the line, and even Collar Jex says you can let me go. And finally, I think at the end, he devises a plan in which everybody in town puts on this face makeup, which is how the gunslinger was able to identify Collar Jex with this kind of a tattoo that he had. And as the gunslinger arrives at noon, the doctor sends off a sound wave from his
Sonic screwdriver.
Wow. It's one of those nights. Sonic screwdriver.
What's up, man?
Woo-wee.
101. Bush League.
Bush League stuff. Yeah, sends out a sonic boom or whatever from his sonic screwdriver, and that kind of slows down the gunslinger a bit. Meanwhile, everybody...
Disorients him long enough for them to all kind of cause mass confusion with all these people with the tattoos on their faces.
It's interesting. At one point, he hears a noise. The gunslinger hears a noise at the local church where everybody's... a lot of people are praying. Walks over there. Blows the door open, walks in, and is about to just obliterate the place when he sees a young girl. This is very Frankenstein, reminded me of. Sees a little girl and decides that maybe murder isn't the right way. Maybe mass death isn't the right way to go.
I never got the sense that he was going to just obliterate the whole town. I think he was looking for Jex.
Because
you find out pretty early on in the episode that he is not out to kill innocent people. He has a chance to kill Collar Jex at one point very, very early on in the episode, which kind of establishes right away that we know that something's not quite what it seems to be with the cyborg, which is that he has a chance to take a shot at Jex, but his optics or whatever determine that there's an 87% chance that he'll hit an innocent, and he refuses to take that shot because of that possibility. And earlier on, you find out that he rather than kill anyone who tried to get in or out of the town, he sent warning shots at the, you know, shut off a guy's hat and stuff like that, rather than kill anyone. So he's not like Maleficent. He's not trying to kill.
He's kind of all
like,
talk.
Just out to kill people. He just wants Jex.
Yeah, he just wants Jex. He's kind of all talk. He threatened the entire town, even though knowing he probably wasn't gonna try to harm everybody. Right. Anyways,
but Collar, he gets pushed further and further as you go along. In it, you know, but with his desire to kill Jex, he begins to become frustrated enough. Mm-hmm. You kind of get the feeling that he might turn on people if he absolutely has to.
Sure. Jex escapes. Finds his spaceship, boards a spaceship, and then has kind of an epiphany, and says, "You know, I've got to pay for my crimes." Instead of escaping, which is even the Doctor wanted him to escape, and then Amy and Rory all the time.
That was the plan.
Collar Jex just commits suicide. He blows his self-destructs his ship. The cyborg, or the gunslinger, I forget his name. What was his name? Collar. His name was Collar something too, right?
Oh, I did. Well, I mean, they were all called Collar because that was like the name of their planet.
Their planet,
it was also their surname or whatever like that. But I don't know if they ever actually gave his specific the specific name of the gunslinger. I think
they
called him that throughout.
Well, regardless, he almost praises the Doctor for or Collar Jex for going out honorably and owning up to his crimes by killing himself. And at the end, the Doctor, who that we know, basically puts the gunslinger in charge of the town, in charge of protecting the town. So that's where it ends, and the Doctor and Amy and Rory kind of take off. Let's kind of get right into what we thought about this episode. After that, actually, somewhat of a brief rundown. What'd you think of the episode?
I liked it a lot. This is a Toby Whitehouse jam, which I remember last season of The Lonely TARDIS. We had the God Complex from him, which I stumbled over quite badly in our discussion of last year. But he's back again, and I really loved his work on the God Complex. And I think I definitely think that God Complex is a stronger episode than this one. I like this one a whole lot. Toby Whitehouse being the writer, I should point out, and that is his involvement with this. I'm a sucker for the Old West. I grew up watching Old West movies and stuff like that, so I love to see my favorite character on TV, the Doctor, in one of my favorite sort of settings out there. So that right off the bat, they kind of had me hooked. In general, I like cyborgs as well. I just think it was kind of hitting every note for me.
Sure.
Oddly enough, I felt like the episode almost feel like a Doctor Who episode in some ways. Tonally. It almost felt more. And I've been watching a lot of Star Trek: The Next Generation recently, so that might be why I feel this way. But
you felt those like holodeck-ish?
It almost felt more like an episode of Star Trek. I almost got the feeling that like the Doctor could have been Captain Picard or something like that, coming down on an away mission or something like that.
Or it could have been like a.
It touches on a lot of themes like planetary, planet-wide war and revenge and self-sacrifice and war crimes. Very heady, big issues and stuff like that. Not the kind of thing that Doctor Who usually touches on. Doctor Who usually likes to bring in a lot of big spectacle to talk about a very small kind of idea, like usually something to do with sort of the human spirit or human personality and the soul and stuff like that. But this was definitely more of a like socio-political sort of fueled episode, and that was kind of a refreshing change of pace for me. I really enjoyed that.
Again, we deal with surprisingly, this is almost the third episode in a row that we deal with some sort of mass genocide.
Isn't it interesting? Like with mass murder, Asylum of the Daleks. You had the Daleks wiping out the asylum planet. In the second one, you had Solomon annihilating pretty much every last trace of the Silurians in the space. And now in this one, we find out that almost this entire planet had been completely wiped out, and even more so after the Cyborgs got to killing the other team. So
the other team, yeah, the Red Sox.
The other guys. But it was to protect them from some kind of mass genocide. I'm almost wondering if that's going to become a running clue. If that is this season's running clue, you know, if that is this season's bad wolf is the genocide. The same way that the cracks were the clue, and the planets being sucked away in season 4 were the clue, and you know, stuff like that. If this is somehow tied to some greater plan of whatever that primary antagonist that we were kind of mentioning last episode, whatever his plan is, if it involves somehow creating or influencing mass murder to happen or something like that, or if that he is somehow utilizing it or leading the Doctor into situations that involve it or something like that.
So you know, I think you're getting a good point there, but the theme that I kept seeing was one of, and Amy kind of mentions it during that the monologue where she's kind of calming the Doctor down from after he flips out. So the Doctor flips out and says, "So first of all, the town is called Mercy, which is a big tell on the entire episode, which is about mercy and forgiveness, vengeance, justice, that kind of thing." And Amy says, so the Doctor is about to let Collar Jex get murdered by the gunslinger, kind of walks him across that barrier. And Amy basically, I don't know where Amy pulls a gun on the Doctor and says, you can't do that. You can't, your version of mercy is distorted. It's because you've been away from people for so long. You've been away from stability. You've been away from human interaction. You've been on your own this entire time, and you've lost kind of that humanity that you've had in the past, that rationality. So that theme, I think, has been what that amounts to, at least to me, is that the theme is you need Doctor Who needs us, needs humans. The more you're away from us, the less human you become, and the less in touch with who you are, you know, this rational, this logical person that doesn't let emotion get to him, the more you become like everybody else on your planet that led to war. I kind of see the Doctor right now turning into all the
Rassilon.
Basically turning into the whole reason that Gallifrey is gone, becoming kind of a loose cannon. And so the longer he's away from Amy and Rory, the more he's becoming this. So I think that's why he keeps coming back to them.
Well, yeah, I think that you're absolutely right, and this kind of confirms the sort of theory.
Sure,
I mean,
sure.
you know, two times is a coincidence, three times is a pattern. This kind of confirms the theory that we and especially Sean had last week, which was that the Doctor has been forgetting himself.
Yep.
And
yep.
That maybe, and because generally speaking, at least with Stephen Moffat's run, nothing on Doctor Who doesn't happen, and nothing on Doctor Who happens without a kind of a bigger reason that we'll find out later. I think that it's going to tie into more than just his character, but to the plot itself, just like Sean predicted in the last episode. But
sure.
So we've confirmed that is definitely a personal theme for the Doctor, but we'll see if it ends up tying into the plot or into the main overarching plot as we go along here. But yeah, I definitely agree that it's like Batman after the death in the family storyline, where the second Robin died and Batman didn't have Robin anymore, and suddenly this other kid had to come in and say, like, Batman's going over the edge, you gotta go help him. And it's exactly the same thing with the Doctor here. The Doctor needs companions to keep, not only to protect him when he in times of need physically, but to keep the Doctor as the Doctor. Towards the end of the specials with David Tennant, the Doctor didn't really have a regular companion for those specials. And towards the end, when we got to Waters of Mars, we saw what happened to him after he went too long without companions, and he became the Time Lord Victorious or whatever like that, and we don't want to see that, because that is not the Doctor as we want the Doctor, or the Doctor wants himself to be, and he just needs to have those companions around to remind him that is not who he wants to become.
No, you know, I totally agree with you. It's I just think that there this whole theme of, and like I said, we talked about it last week with the silence being this, maybe this the antagonist, but this whole theme of the And I think a lot of this is going to be tied up in the, again, with the 50th anniversary. And Sean mentioned it last week. Maybe the answer to Doctor Who is, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, maybe it's human. I don't know. Maybe it's like the Doctor.
I mean, that's a stretch, but I get what you're like.
You know what I'm trying to say?
But
yeah.
I get what you're saying.
I mean, the Doctor wouldn't be the Doctor if it wasn't for humans. And I think, have we ever seen in any of the episodes the actual War of Gallifrey like take place?
The Time War? Nothing. And that's something I've talked about before, is that I wish they would almost just do a mini series event with Paul McGann and just totally show us the Time War with the Eighth Doctor. But yeah,
you know, and that might very well happen during this 50th anniversary. That may be something that they visit. But you know, it's just interesting how the you notice it last season, right? Because he was something about River Song really kind of threw him for a loop. And spoilers, you know, we know, here's a spoiler, she comes back in episode 5 of this series. Unspoiler.
Right. Right. And that's in the promo material.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, so.
But, you know, I think you know, she kind of caused him to lose a little bit of who he was initially. Obviously, he had some. It was almost like he became uber human, like almost too human when she was involved. But now that she's not there and he's been away from Amy and Rory, he's become much less of a human. So I think the whole persona of the Doctor completely revolves around him being around humans rather than other aliens.
I kind of like where you were going with that, with the idea of the Doctor. He, you know, if you think of him like an empty jar, mm-hmm, or something, mm-hmm, like that, and he, you know, he's half filled with Time Lord, half filled with human. I think that at a certain point when he was with River Song and Amy for so long and became, you know, he literally had a family. He had step parents and a wife and stuff like that. He got so filled with humanity and got brought down so. I mean, they talk about it. They, you know, you fall even further. He got brought down so low. So, you know, comparing, you know, to what he would think of himself, he got brought back down to such a mm-hmm, lowly state, mm-hmm, as being almost like a human being. That when that all disappeared, what was left of him wasn't enough, and so it had to be refilled with something else. And I think that what that something else was, you know, from a, you know, this is a kind of convoluted metaphor, and I don't know anything about psychology, so this is probably all just gobbledygook. But what he filled himself up with again was more Time Lordness,
yep,
when he didn't have the humans around, and he, you know, he had this void in his life. He had been, you know, he had risen so high and fallen so much further, and he had this void after his after all that happened, that he replaced everything. He replaced who he was with something else, and now Amy and Rory are seeing that, and they're like, "We're not having any of that." And well, it'll be interesting to see how River Song takes to this in episode 5 here, when the angels show up and whatnot, and.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
See how her reaction is to the Doctor, the new Doctor, you know, or the Doctor that might be changing at least.
Yeah, so let's get back to this episode in particular. What did you think about the overall pacing of this episode?
So this is something that I kind of have a pet peeve with almost any storytelling structure, is any kind of. It's really hard to convey the sense of the passage of time properly in terms of pacing, and I think that this one doesn't do so very particularly well. I think there should have been, because it takes place over the course of about 2 days, I think, like that, and you know, you have like one event at nighttime, and then moving into the daytime, and maybe this is just me, you know, just an issue with me, but when you do that and then you show the intervening time between day one and day two, you can either show day one and day two and it feels normal, or you can and not show any of the nighttime stuff. But when you show just enough of the nighttime stuff to establish it and then just kind of move on from there really, really quickly, it feels a little bit hinky to me, I guess. It just there's a movie called 30 Days of Night, this vampire movie, and I think that kind of can crystallizes that theory pretty well, is that they just jump forward in time, you know, now it's day 29, now it's day 8 or whatever. so constantly, and I think that kind of throws me off. For some reason, that always just throws me off pretty badly in terms of pacing. I feel like they tried to cram too much stuff happening into too little of a time of an episode. You know, it's a 1 hour episode. It's not a, you know, it's not a two parter or anything like that. So it was a little bit strange. Go ahead. Overall, once you actually got into the day one and day two, I felt like the pacing was pretty okay. I think they speckled enough humor in there every once in a while with the Undertaker trying to take his measurement constantly.
Yeah, exactly. Yep.
It was still a pretty dark episode, you know, dealing with the things that it dealt with. As we've seen, this season has been much darker than previous seasons, even if we don't see all of the really horrible stuff happening. Some pretty horrible stuff happens in the background and in sort of flashbacks and such. And it's interesting to see that take on things. And on such a, like I said earlier, on such a almost galactic scale rather than a one-to-one scale, like a personal scale. You know, bad things happen to individuals in Doctor Who, but not generally to entire civilizations like that, like it has been happening here. And to see that scope was also very interesting.
You know, overall, I think the theme was more important than the actual execution of this episode. And by that, I mean, this whole, the Doctor losing his humanity, losing who he is, was so powerful and so strong in this from beginning to end that it's almost like they needed to wrap a story around it. They needed to advance the theme to get to this season, kind of the mid-season point. And so I think that, hey, we haven't done a Wild West before. Seems kind of cool. The whole idea of Mercy, you can have a town called Mercy. I think a lot of things fell in place to support the theme rather than the Doctor coming there for a reason, right? I mean, they invented this reason that was, hey, the Doctor's taking us to the Day of the Dead celebration in Mexico. I don't know how big the Day of the Dead celebrations were in the early 1800s or mid 1800s.
Late 1800s, it would have been.
Yeah, exactly.
Post Civil War, so.
But it is Benjamin Franklin era, right? And so, he invented electricity.
Yeah, they were just discovering electricity for the first time.
So it's stuff is
all over the place. Inventing, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Use the proper terminology.
And so, it's interesting to kind of how you start to link all that together. But it worked well. I think the setting worked well. But I just think the theme was almost stronger than the rest of the story. And so they injected a lot of these humorous moments. I don't want to say to take up time or to take up space and be filler, but I think there were like three or four key things that they wanted to hit this episode, and they had to try to, I don't want to say string them together, but it sure kind of felt like that at some point. I mean, there's a whole scene where Rory and the Marshal are out. They leave town in one direction. The Doctor's, the Doctor's going to find the spaceship, so why are Rory and the Marshal even out? I mean, that whole scene is a split-second, blip.
That scene was where we established, though, that he won't shoot innocents. So I think that was the purpose of that scene.
Yeah, but there,
what you're saying.
It could have been done, easily with that.
Hit that beat multiple times. Actually, yep. They have the Marshal saying like he shoots, he gives a warning shot. Yeah. He doesn't just kill, wantonly. And then later on, they say even again, don't worry, he won't kill innocents unless he absolutely has to. When Jex takes Amy hostage at one point, so they kind of hammer that point home several times. So I guess you are right.
So, I love the setting as well. I thought it was, I'm a fan of Westerns, especially, what was the, Tombstone was one of my favorite ones, Unforgiven.
That reminds me, I was going to ask you, what do you think of the look of the cyborg, of the gunslinger?
You know, he was very Terminator meets RoboCop. Very Terminator meets RoboCop. I didn't have, and here's why. The gunslinger had a Stetson.
Yeah.
Why would he need one?
and an ammo belt. I was watching this episode with a friend of mine, and my brother came in late. He's a kind of a mild Doctor Who fan himself, and he came in all about halfway through, and he sees the gunslinger, and he says, "How come he's wearing a hat?" And we were like, "Well, it was because
We don't
It
know.
was. I guess they haven't explained it. I guess in my head, the only explanation I could come to was that maybe it was meant as some kind of like camouflage or disguise.
Sure.
Maybe he put it on earlier on so people wouldn't think he was strange in that time period, which is something that the doctor and his companions
Yes.
never bothered
Yeah.
to do.
Yeah.
But I thought that was maybe the only explanation I could really think of.
Just really bizarre, yeah, to throw it in there.
I personally thought that. Well, you know, a couple of things really stuck out to me. I was like, first off, I thought his gun arm, Mega Man
Yeah,
arm
yeah.
thing looked really, really cool, especially
Yeah, it
when it
did.
was
Yeah.
you were staring right at the barrel. It almost looked like rotating, like circumference of blow torches.
Yep,
I don't know how to
yep.
describe it. I thought it looked very cool in the trailers.
It's like half Mega Man, half Metroid.
Well, those are the same thing, basically. But that and I thought the metal bits of him looked a little plasticky
Yeah,
at times.
yeah.
I guess I couldn't.
Yep.
It's kind of that Doctor Who metal.
Yeah.
All metal on Doctor Who kind of looks like it's half made of like some kind of carbon composite or something like that. It's very strange, almost rubbery looking, and that's it's a and at least it's consistent though, because almost everything on Doctor Who that looks like it's supposed to be made of metal looks like it's made out of that stuff, this sort of molded, rubberized thing.
Sure.
But I really love that gun, and I thought that the whole gunslinger cyborg look to him was very strange. Also, that actor has incredibly tiny lips. I couldn't take my eyes off of that the whole time. Every time he was talking, like his mouth just looked like one third too small for his face.
You know, it was I kind of agree with it, and he looked overly bloated too. He was
Yeah, a
really
little bit
thick,
like
really
he's
thick.
retaining water.
Yeah, exactly. Do you watch The Walking Dead at all?
I watched the first season and gave up because I
Okay.
didn't like it as good as a
Okay.
comic.
And well, there's one of the episodes in The Walking Dead in season two. There's this bloated zombie that's been sitting in water for like
Oh yeah,
weeks.
I've seen stills of that.
Yeah, I think that's the zombie became this cyborg, just this fat, overly
Yeah.
bloated,
They dried him out
cannot
a little
walk.
bit and
Well, you know what's
put a hat
interesting
on
is,
him.
yeah. Well, I think because he was so big, maybe that's why they made him like teleport short distances, because he's just too big and too fat to walk that fast.
I actually liked the way the teleportation looked, though.
Yeah, I like that too. Yeah.
He would kind of, shimmer out of existence mid-step and then finish the step at the end of the next
Yeah, yeah.
teleportation. I thought that looked actually pretty cool. Although it did raise some questions as to like why doesn't he just use that like all the time?
I know, right? They could have done a lot of things all the time, but
And the perimeter was that he wouldn't cross the perimeter himself because he didn't want to put the townspeople at risk, so he was like
Sure,
trying to
sure.
starve them out, right?
Yep.
Well, okay, I wasn't sure because I kind of missed I kind of only half heard that bit of
Yeah.
exposition, so
He wanted to just kind of get them to come out on their own to make it a lot easier for him, so he didn't have to kill anybody that was innocent. So,
right, so he put anybody at risk. Okay.
so I think, you know, that the episode was an interesting one. Personally, not my favorite, but you know, we'll see how the rest of this season goes, as we always say. But
I will say one thing.
yeah.
The gunslinger seems like a really good idea for a character to come back
Sure.
later
So
in like a Demon's Run style setting.
hasn't all yeah, exactly. Haven't all three of these episodes had a really cool concept for characters that could and should come back in? I mean, you know, that each of these episodes designed to kind of be their own movie. But they all have
Yeah.
this theme. So the first episode, you had the crazy Daleks,
Crazy Daleks
and the
and the
human
actually that one had
Daleks.
a
Yeah.
couple of good ones. It had the Prime Minister of the Daleks, and
Yep.
it had
Yep.
the
The Prime
humanized
Minister of the
Daleks too.
Daleks, Sir Dalek. And then the second one, you had Solomon,
The tantrum bots.
and the tantrum bots, which are fantastic. This episode, you had the cyborg. You had the war, this genocidal war, which could be a locale for the Doctor to show up in eventually.
A collar was the name of the planet, I
Yeah,
believe.
exactly. Yep. So there's a lot of cool things that these first three episodes
Man,
have
the
done.
tantrum bots and like an insane Dalek and the gunslinger all on one team together, with the doctor, kind of like a Dalek that is so insane that it
Yeah.
doesn't
Yep.
Or not even, you don't even have to have one, an insane one. You could have the human Dalek, the one with the human mind still. I forget her name.
Yep.
But yeah, a Dalek and the Tantrum Bots and the Gunslinger all fighting by the Doctor's side. How cool would that just look?
Oh, totally, totally.
If you reprogram the Tantrum Bots or something. I know this is just reaching, it'll probably never happen, but it's something that I would love to see.
So let's, before we give our score for this week's episode, have you seen the kind of teaser for next week's The Power of Three?
Yeah, I have.
Do you want to do the quick synopsis of it, or do you want me to go ahead?
I don't know any kind of synopsis of it. I've just seen the teaser, and it seems kind of all over. The teaser seemed almost all over the place, other than the fact that probably going to be set in modern times in Ledboro. Other than that, I couldn't really glean.
Well, it kind of deals with, again, the name is very telling. All of these names have been very, very telling, right? The Asylum of the Daleks is really more related to the human Dalek. It was her asylum, not the crazy Daleks.
Her asylum was her mind.
Yeah, exactly. The second one was
Well, the second one was just a Snakes on a Plane reference. Let's let that be one standalone.
And then the third one, obviously, A Town Called Mercy, and now The Power of Three, which is, again, very telling. The way the trailer has been showing it, essentially it shows Amy and Rory sitting on the couch and discussing all the ways that the Doctor has affected their lives and how they've been kind of leading double lives. They've been leading the normal life, which is just them at home at a house doing house stuff and husband and wife stuff and family stuff. And then they go on these trips with the Doctor where they could be gone for months and years at a time, but then they come back to their friends, and their friends have only aged like a week, but they've aged like 10 years, right?
Oh, and yeah. So, she mentions, yeah. Amy mentions that in episode 2. She says, sooner or later, our friends are going to start noticing that we're aging faster than them, to which I have to say, like, well, how do you even maintain regular friends when you're constantly gallivanting off with the Doctor?
Sure. The episode kind of deals with them, at least from the synopsis, them having a choice. And they're trying to decide, do they continue living a double life, or do they choose between, staying with the Doctor or staying at home? So I think
so there's
three
choices.
There's three choices. There's three people that are really important. The Doctor, Amy, and Rory. Is it going to be a trio, or is it going to be a mano a mano? But we'll find out next week. Right now, let's kind of close up shop with.
Can I make one more, just in keeping in the tradition of making crazy predictions at the end of every episode.
And tangents, yeah.
Oh, and tangents. But no, this is my crazy prediction for Doctor Who. Another possibility for who the main magnum opus villain will be for this season, or the big bad, I guess. I'm guessing the Doctor himself. I'm guessing there's maybe either... I'm guessing that there's maybe some kind of split duality going on in his mind or something. Mm-hmm. I think it might tie back to the Dream Lord. For some reason, I've been getting flashes of the Dream Lord in my, when I've been thinking about the Doctor recently, and them talking about how the Dream Lord was a part of the Doctor and stuff like that. I almost wonder if there's some kind of split personality going on, or maybe he's projecting some kind of living entity out of his own thoughts or something like that.
That's very interesting. Is maybe that's part of the entire theme of the season, which is these standalone movies, kind of like standalone dreams. Every dream is different. Every dream is its own movie. Maybe that is part of it. It's an interesting one. So we have the Dream Lord, we have the Silence, and we have some version of the Master that's somehow linked to the Silence. As some of the options, but let's go with our scores. I'm going to tell you, because Sean could make it tonight, he gave us his score. And out of his exact phrasing was, since you're recording without me, use the Cyborg Assassin scale to rate. In my opinion, I give the episode 3.5 out of 5 Cyborg Assassins. Steven, what do you give it?
I'm going to give it a flat 3. I thought it was a very entertaining episode, but I didn't think it was anything super special. Maybe if I watch it a couple more times, that score will change. But for right now, it's a flat 3. I enjoyed it, but it wasn't. It didn't quite live up to the expectations that I had for a Toby Whitehouse episode.
I'm also going to go with a flat 3, only because I liked the theme and I liked the setting. But I didn't like the I just didn't like the plot. It didn't do anything for me. It didn't really hit home. There wasn't enough, nearly enough action like there was in previous episodes. Yeah, I just kind of think it was it was just a
It was a good
yeah,
episode.
It was a
I
good
mean, it was
episode.
good. That was
It
that's
wasn't a
three.
bad, yeah, it's
It's
true.
good. It's not bad. It's not great, but it's good.
It's setting up something. It was a
Yeah.
great setup episode for these last two with Amy and Rory.
You know,
So,
and that's the thing about
yeah.
Doctor Who episodes is sometimes you find out that an episode earlier on in the season is way more important than you ever did. So, you know, we might go get to episode 7 or something after the season mid-season break, and it'll turn out that A Town Called Mercy is incredibly, incredibly important to the plot, and then suddenly we'll go back and say, "Oh well, if this episode hadn't been done the way it had been done, then it would never would have worked." So 5 out of 5.
Exactly. Well, I guess that's pretty much it for this week's episode of the TARDIS, which is
Yeah.
interesting. It was short and sweet, although it was about 45 minutes, so it really wasn't all that short, but it was sweet, that's for
It
sure.
was. Oh yeah, it was nougaty.
It was nudity. Anyways, that's about it. I hope next week I'm looking forward to it. From the standpoint that it's the big lead up episode to Angels in Manhattan. So
Angels
although
Take Manhattan.
Yeah, Angels Take Manhattan. Although, didn't you find it really interesting? I almost wonder who this little girl was in this episode because she keeps kind of referring to this town, and it was her great grandmother. So she's definitely someone who's alive, maybe in our time now. And she called the gunslinger their angel.
I yeah, that's true. I
so
think I
that.
did
I
pick up on that.
wonder, yeah, I wonder if that has anything to do with subsequent. There's so many little nougats that the Moffat has thrown in these
Nougats.
nougats that Moffat's thrown in these. So,
Yeah, I wouldn't read too much into that because they've literally done almost entirely this the almost the exact same thing before with children talking about how they remember the doctor is his intervention and stuff like that. But the reference to angels, I mean, the Stephen Moffat does have a tendency, like I said, to he doesn't like to
yep.
let things be thrown in for no apparent reason.
Definitely, definitely. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that is it for season 2, episode 3 of The Lonely TARDIS. For Sean Norton, which is at Sean Norton on Twitter, for myself at Cool Rats, and for Steven Strom,
Steven Strom.
Strom, Steven Strom, Mickey Mouse, Steven Strom. You can find us at Lonely TARDIS on Twitter, and please, 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 please be ready. Our website will be launching shortly. We will have an email address and everything for you to send us information. But tweet at us. Until then, tell us your
And rate us
thoughts.
and review us on iTunes.
Exactly. See you guys next time on the Lonely TARDIS.
TARDIS, TARDIS, TARDIS,
TARDIS,
TARDIS. Nougat, nougat.
Nougat.